That was an A&W root beer.
Yeah.
It's zero sugar and zero calories because and zero caffeine because Neil's becoming Mormon, and this is our intervention episode. Yeah, yeah, yeah. My friend at work was, I told him about my first time betting at the Super Bowl with your help and how I lost money and I had to pay to my bookie. But
that's right.
But then he said, hey, why don't you get in on this March Madness brackets thing, right? The 16 or whatever it's called. What's it called?
64. March 64. Madness.
Well, that was the thing. Because I thought it had something to do with the number 16. Or
well, there's a Sweet 16.
The Sweet 16.
That starts this weekend.
So I was like,
the
time okay.
of the recording.
Probably. So I was like, okay, maybe I can go ahead and I was like, okay, so what do I do? Like pick 16 teams or something like that that I think might do good? He says, no, you have to pick 64 teams and you decide who's going to win what. I'm like,
technically, yeah, you pick 32 winners out of the 64 and then you keep going whittling.
Yeah, down. I was like, I don't think I can pick, I don't think I can name 16.
You don't name them, you just pick them.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think I can name 16 basketball teams total.
You don't need
so,
to.
Picking them, I would just be like, well, then that one.
There's ones and there's 16s. One is good, 16 is bad.
How would I know that?
Because I just told you.
Yeah, but which one's good, which one's bad?
The one.
Well, how do I know which one's one?
It has it next to it.
Oh, see, I don't know how any of this
works.
There's
a number. There's a team. It has a name. And next yes. to it is a number.
And they just give you this number?
Yeah.
Oh.
They're set up that way. They're ranked.
So I could just pick the ones that are ranked the highest to win?
Yeah.
Oh.
You can pick all four ones all the way down.
See, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's what I'm teaching you. I do a bracket every year.
Well, he was doing a bracket at work, and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. This is out of my depth.
Yeah, I'll show you here.
There we go. Okay, so this is Neil's bracket we're looking at.
All these people are in my bracket.
All these people are in my bracket.
Okay.
You might know some of these
You can people. Move your microphone.
I know, huh? You might know some of these people.
I don't know any of these people. Are these people?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, these are people. Okay, I see. All right, and so what are these points in max and correct?
You get points for each right answer you get.
Uh-huh.
And the farther down you go, if you have things that are wrong, you have fewer chances to get them right.
So Lisa's losing here. Not, she's not doing well.
Yes. Lisa usually beats me, just to let you know.
Mike Lang's doing good.
There you go.
Good job, Mike.
See, Mike's in it.
Yeah. Oh, you're doing really good.
Yeah, for once.
Yeah.
The first, I used to be really good at this in the early 2000s and the 90s and stuff. I felt like I beat all my friends and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Then I started this bracket challenge and I got really close to winning. It depended on the end of the game the last game. I think I was in second place, and it was Kansas versus Kentucky. And if Kansas got it right, I would get points enough to jump the first place guy. Problem was, Kentucky won. So the first place guy stayed in first place, and like three people behind me jumped me. And ever since then, I've sucked. So this is the way the bracket looks.
Yes, that's what I saw, and I was like, I don't think I can do this.
Well,
I saw a blank bracket.
Way. See all the numbers?
Yeah, see, I didn't see any numbers.
Yeah, they're on there.
Okay.
And then there's all the teams.
And then you just tap and pick and whatever?
Yeah, you tap and pick it. And you pick the team that you think is going to win. So right there is UConn. They're number one. Most people have them to win it all. See, what you do is you say they're going to beat that 16 team. Because only once has a 16 lost to a 1. And the one time it was University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
Oh, see, and this is college.
And they beat Virginia.
See, I thought this was not college. I thought it was like professional.
You think there's 64 professional basketball teams?
I don't know. There's more than 64 cities.
Oh, boy.
Don't we? Yeah, yeah.
So then as you notice, it goes down and down and down. See, it goes farther down. See, the two winners play. And the winners play and the winners play.
Just like on the...
And then it goes, there's the other side, there's the other
which,
side.
Which fighting game was like this? No, not the...
Street Fighter?
Street Fighter didn't do brackets like this. One of those fighting games did brackets like this, though.
Maybe a lot of things use brackets.
Killer Instincts or something like that?
A lot of things use brackets. These are the most famous brackets.
Okay.
The hockey will have brackets.
Oh, you see, I understand hockey.
Kind of. He just to let you guys know he's hockeying now.
Yes, I am a hockey. All right, so Ryan from work, I think maybe I could do that next time because now it makes a...
And then what you could do is once you already have it down, you can join my bracket.
Yeah, once I figure it out because your bracket's competitive.
Well,
I'm assuming his bracket's competitive.
Everything's competitive.
That's true. I'm not super competitive.
You don't have to be. Just set it. Like, I got my father-in-law, my mother-in-law, my brother-in-law, my sister-in-law.
I saw Robert on there.
I made one for Robert. Vincent's on it. He made one for William. William did
that's
his.
That's funny. Yeah.
William's kicking butt.
Is he?
Yeah.
Awesome. Good for him.
Yeah, he's, where is he? He's in 14th place.
Oh, that's not bad because you have like 30-something people 30 in
there? 30
people. Yeah.
And Vincent's in 26th place.
He's doing about as good as Lisa.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny.
So, but these are brackets. Yeah. There's, you could do a hockey one, too.
Okay.
Because now the way they set up hockey, they used to reseed hockey. So the idea is like one would play 8-2 versus 7, stuff like that. And then what would happen is if this number two team lost and they'd play 7, so now the 7 team's there, the way in a bracket would work was that team would play the 3-6 winner and the 4-5 winner would play the number one team.
So if these are always labeled that way,
yes.
Then how come the winners aren't as predictable? I guess, I mean, whenever you get like the 5-6 playing against each other, or do they just get better or more competitive?
Yeah, but even the 5-12 plays each other, sometimes the 5 win. That's why it's madness.
Oh, so that's what's interesting to me. Because is it just the...
There was a 14 that beat a three the other day.
Because how does the ranking... Is the ranking based off of player stats or overall wins as a team or points scored?
It's how good a committee determines you to be.
A random committee.
Not a random committee, a select committee.
A select committee who wants you to lose at betting?
No, this has nothing to do with betting.
You sure it's not rigged? Sounds like they're giving particular scores to particular ponies and, you know, telling you to bet on this other pony instead.
They don't tell you to bet on anything.
Well, it sounds like they're telling you to, if they say this team's better than this team and they're going to play each other.
That's how they set it up. They set it up so the best teams have the better chance to win.
But then they don't always win.
Right.
That's why it's madness.
That's why it's madness.
Or so is the number 5 team really a good team and this committee's like, we're going to put them up against number 12 so we can make a lot of money.
No, there's no.
Sounds like they're juicing the horse.
No, they're not. They might do some stuff where they're like, hey, look, this coach coaches for this team, but he used to coach for that team. So if we put them in the same side, maybe they'll play each other in the second round or something. Sometimes they do that.
I don't know.
But that's, you know, because it's also a TV show.
Yeah.
But it has nothing. Yeah. So what it is you pretty much have 64 teams. Really, it's 68 teams. What they do is they have... They rank them like 1 through 68, roughly.
Yeah.
And then they set them up. So like your top 4 get 1 seats and they put 1 here, 1 there, 1 there, 1 there. And into the 4 different brackets, and to the 4 different brackets of 16. And then the idea is your 4th best 1 should play your 1st best 2 and then go like a snake and go back and forth.
Gotcha.
It's supposed to go that way. Sometimes, it, you know, they kind of fool with it or they don't rank people as high as you think, but that's how they determine it.
Well, it sounds like they're gamifying the game, right? So that way you are more invested in, like financially invested or addicted to the game or watching the game or
what's... Well, it's...
Because to me, it relates to the article.
That works out well.
It does.
So... That's funny how things work out that way. We didn't even set this up.
No, we didn't.
But so the idea is you want to watch this tournament. And at one point in time, the tournament probably had something like 16 teams all together or something. And for many years back in the day, like when our parents were kids, it was like 32 teams or something. But they've been 64 for, you know, 40 years or so. Or maybe 1985, something like that. It went to 64 teams. And then you had your 16, you know, your 4 brackets of 16. And the idea is you just watch it on how they all slowly shrink. And then a lot of people like it also. You know, a lot of people do bet on it and stuff like that.
Or before
competitions like this. And
right. Before that would be like either local, like in your home competitions with a whiteboard or like some kind of...
Well, people still do that. Like now, like the thing that I have here, it's an app and all my friends are on it and now they can see the app. And before that, you used to have to go to your desktop computer. But before that, I used to have pieces of paper.
Right.
And you'd all fill out a piece of paper and give me the piece of paper.
Yeah, there's no
way. And then I would keep that piece of paper with other pieces of paper. And then when games would win or lose, I would circle or scratch out the guys.
You're a real bookie.
Yeah. And sometimes if you put in money or not or whatever, like I did it with my friends back in the day. And, you know, the idea is we'd all go out to eat and then all the other 3 guys would
have to buy
my food or something. Yeah. A lot of times we just do it for fun.
Right. Right.
Like this one's all for fun.
Which makes sense. But it's really interesting because if we relate it to this article, which we'll talk about in just a second, but they made it into a kind of a product, right? Because the app, I'm assuming, it's probably free, but it's probably full of ads or things
like that. No, the app's not the thing.
What is the app?
Well, the app's just a sports app.
Just a sports app. Like,
yeah, it's CBS's sports app.
Oh, okay. So it's CBS's sports app, which they're getting ad revenue and things like that.
Yeah, they still do that too. Right, but course, the, right. the point of the brackets is different than just this.
Oh, I'm sure. But that's one of the reasons, that's one of the ways in which they can turn this game that people used to play for funsies in their home with pieces of paper into a profitable mechanism.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Now that they have that, CBS does more so because they are the ones who've been showing the games.
The games, right.
You can do one on ESPN. Heck, you could probably do one on Buffalo Wild Wings or whatever. Other people do, you know, apps. And what they do is they have, you know, a lot of people, they'll do things where you can join the competition and there's like, you know, 500,000 people or something doing it or something like, here, let's see. Because I also submitted my bracket into CBS's thing and I am ranked 193,236th place.
Wow.
Let me see. Yeah. And let's see if there's a total. Oh my goodness. It just shows one. It shows 1 through 21 and then it shows me way on the bottom. But I don't know how many people there are in it, but I'm like close to 200,000th place.
Right.
But my father-in-law is like close to 400,000th place.
Oh wow.
So I don't know how many people are in these or how many people have multiple brackets.
Right. That's wild.
But the actual tournament itself was set up, you know, right. to determine a winner.
Of and course.
The
idea Does is that makes sense.
Yeah, there's like 30 something conferences and everybody gets a representative.
Yeah.
And then they throw in, you know, 30 to 38 at-large teams, and they're mostly teams you've heard of that are some of the best in the country or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then the idea is they whittle them down. But they do the same thing for other sports. Like right. baseball still has 64 teams in it too, but nobody watches college baseball. But it's a kind of a cool setup.
See, I would have thought professional baseball. But yeah, to me, no, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, when you have like basketball for Division I, you have like 300-something teams.
So to me, so here's where my mind goes with all of this. So the bracket thing, in order to find like the champion or the championship team or the best team for this particular season, that all makes total sense to me. That's like the integrity of the game. You want to find out who is best coached, best under pressure, you know, who has the best players, who can get together as a team, even if they don't necessarily have the best players, and yet somehow manage to pull off a really great team, even if you don't have like the Michael Jordan or whatever it happens to be. And so that all makes sense to me. But then like you have this, the external thing of the companies taking the brackets or the gamification of the bracketing, right? So now we can see who can pick the best teams, maybe place wagers on it or whatever, and turn it into a way to market our particular app, right? And so to get more people on the app, so perhaps they'll subscribe so they can watch this particular game, and then we can make some revenue off them, or at the very least, show our ad users
your ad
advertisers, you know, how many people have downloaded the app, and so that way we can get more apps or more advertisers generating more money for us.
Oh, and then people mock this too, like not mock it, but like they copy it too. So they might do, hey, what's the best potato? And they do a bracket on mashed versus baked versus french fries.
Potatoes, boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew.
And you can go to the potato website and watch that. That's or funny. Like, you know, certain things will be like right now they were doing like Universal Monsters or something, but they were doing out of the Screen Queen people. So like, oh, is the Elizabeth from what's it called, Frankenstein, better than, you know, whoever Julie Adams was in Creature of the Black Lagoon? And then people would vote on it and stuff. They did one for Star Wars years ago. Like,
but that would be really fun for like horror films and like
the, yeah, they've done stuff like that. I've seen it with Disney movies and stuff. They've done it, like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, so it's the gamification of the brackets and things like that. But to me, those are two distinct things, right? So there was a guy out of Notre Dame. I think we talked about this on the show before. He's a professor of ethics there, Alistair McIntyre. He wrote a book called After Virtue, where he makes the distinction between internal goods and external goods. The internal goods are the things that are of the nature of the game, of the nature of the activity or whatever. Here, what's this? Disney movie brackets. That's funny. And what, is this all based off of people voting, or how do they determine?
Somebody set it up, and then probably people voted for it.
Okay, because they rank them too. That's funny.
Yeah, so somebody picked the ranking,
right?
Maybe they had a group of friends or somebody, or people who work. I don't know what that's from. I just picked that up.
Manny made
it. Manny made it. You know.
Yeah.
And then what you could do is sometimes they can sit there and have people vote on it or whatnot.
That's funny. The Princess region, the Pixar region, the Classics region, and the Modern Classics region.
Yeah, so sometimes you could set that up too and divvy them up like that.
The final four. Anyway, so the bracket thing and the play of the game, that to me sounds like the internal goods of the game, right? Mm-hmm. To where like, okay, who's the best at playing the actual game, right? And who's the best at coaching it and putting it all together, and let's follow that. Let's chase after that because they're enhancing the game itself. But the external game or the external goods of the game are all the things that have nothing to do with the game itself. So the money that the players get or the prestige that we give them in our culture or the commercials that they're in or something like that. And then the gamification of the bracket system to me sounds like an external good that is being able to be turned into a way for the corporations and for CBS or the app companies to generate money off of people's love for the particular game. So that's what that sounds like to me. So
you're not even counting the actual game itself.
Right, right. No.
The fact that they're played in different cities and each city has people who go to these games.
Right, of course.
Which have hotels and restaurants and stuff like that. So then it's a piece of tourism. So people go to Salt Lake City right now because they had games there.
Which is, that's an external good, right? There's nothing inherent.
Or they come here.
Right.
And then they make bets and then they go to restaurants and pay some odd amount of money just to sit in the restaurant.
That's a good example as to like the Taylor Swift phenomena, right? Last year she was named as the Time Magazine's Person of the Year, right? Mm-hmm. Because any city that she'd go to, she brought a massive boom to that economy because of the tourism and things like that because she did a concert there, right? Uh-huh. And so she made a huge impact economically regardless of what people thought about her music or things like that. So that's an external goods to the actual thing, right? Which I also found was interesting because she ended up getting an award primarily because external goods to the activity that she's trying to do, which is interesting to me. So what's this?
That's people watching.
That's
the people watching the games at the South Point.
Oh, okay. So this is the Sweet Six. No, what is it called? March Madness. What's it?
The tournament.
The tournament.
The NCAA tournament.
There you go. And
we're gonna have to edit this so you don't sound so dumb.
No, that's fine. I don't mind sounding dumb. But so this seems to me a shift in focus to the externals of the game because that's where money can be made because they can't make money off of how good a particular basketball player is unless they can make you pay for the fact that that basketball player is really good, right? Or that basketball team is really good or that coach is really good, right? So they pay for, like, you want to go and see them, you want to go and see their skill and things like that. So that's why concert tickets are like through the roof or whatever. And they took this particular game and turned it into a way to make money off of it as a focus on the external goods. That's what I'm seeing a lot of right now in as a shift of our culture is the value being placed in the external goods versus the internal goods of the activity itself, right? So it's cool that these teams are really good, but I especially like for an example the bracket thing, like I'm not going to ultimately care who wins the championship, even if I'm playing the bracket thing. I'm going to care about how well I did in the bracket, which has nothing to do about the game itself. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
and I think that's going to be a lot of people.
You're saying it has to do with you because of what you picked.
Because of what I picked, right?
Right.
Right.
A lot of times that's it. But then people who like sports sometimes care.
I know that that's the case. But part of the draw to the other people is they're focusing on, they want the other people to focus on these external goods because they're not into the game. And that way they can still gain money off of these external folks. So the money that's actually being put into the game is not for the sake of the game itself, but essentially for the external goods to get more people to come and watch, more people to come and participate, more people to come and put their eyes on a game that they may not actually care about at all, but are potential eyes for advertisers or any of the external goods because that's what they're focused on.
Some of it, yeah.
But I've seen, you know, this is just an interesting example, but I've seen that like with the Taylor Swift thing, you know, this example here, but the one that really stuck with me was like, actually, this conversation that somebody I know had that I'm going to protect the identities because of reasons, with a boss at their work. And in this conversation, the boss at their work had talked about, hey, we need to do this, this, and this, so that way everybody can get additional money. You know, we want to make sure that everybody has this extra cash or whatever. And that was really the emphasis of the pep talk, so to speak, right?
And the employees?
Yeah, for the employees. And the problem with that is this person said, well, my employees, the ones that, you know, my managers here that you're talking to, they're not motivated by money like you are, you know, so the money is the external good to the activity itself. They're motivated by the job itself or by doing a good job for the sake of it itself. They want to be good at what they do.
Or were they saying not to do a good job?
No, they were, but it had nothing to do with the job. They're like, I want you to do this so that way you can get money and your motivation should be the external good.
That's why most people do jobs.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I'm talking about, is that it's not a craft anymore. People don't pick the job so much so, especially nowadays, so much so because it's a craft or because it's something handed on from their family's heritage or something like that. But for the sake of the external goods, they pursue the careers that are going to maximize the external goods for them, right? So I want a job that's going to make enough money for me, opposed to I want to put something out in the world and make a craft type thing. Now, there are some of that, but I think a large proportion of people wants to go ahead and work their job or work their thing for the sake of the money and then just use the money for whatever else they want to do. And it has nothing to do with the craft of their job itself, right? There's no real care. So I see it in resumes where people just hop from career to career to career without any like rhyme or reason. You know, I'm a science spinner for these couple of years. And then, you know, I worked at a bank and now I work at a youth minister or, you know, all these things that.
Were you a science spinner?
No, that would be funny though, right? No, but all these
things. Because you worked at a bank.
I sure did. Those just came to my mind. But all these things of like, you know, every year or every 2 years, people drastically changing the job, essentially wandering aimlessly seeking the external goods of the job is what it looks like to me. And just talking with people, I think that's a lot of people's focus, you know, when they talk about, oh, you know, I'm interested in applying that for that position, not because I think this is a vocation for me, but what do they pay? You know, do they pay well? You know, I mean, that's important, but yeah. That's secondary good, right? Versus primary good. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I think you're kind of pie in the sky here.
I am a little pie in the sky.
Because it's not like people like, I'm a basket weaver and we weave baskets in my family. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know.
No, but there's no, in a world where we make the secondary goods the primary goods, there's no advancement in the field, right? So if you just go, for example, let's take ministry, for example, because that's the world that I know. If you just go to ministry.
That's not going to work because there's no money.
There's not great money, but you know, it's still a paycheck. And your whole focus is the external goods, you know, the paycheck or the public eye, because you're always in the public eye, you know, you want the prestige or you want people to think you're holy or whatever happens to be, mm-hmm. right? And that's your focus, right? Then you're never going to advance the field itself. Right, you're never going to change how youth ministry is played, so to speak. Or, I think that's a really great example because there are things that need to be changed and moved in youth ministry that it's going to require phenomenal youth ministers who are called to that ministry in order to do so. Like one of the main areas of youth ministry where there is problem and need for growth is. Goals and measurements. You don't know and you can't, there's not a really great way to measure success in youth ministry.
Not really.
Right. And that's not super good because, you know, there are costs associated with youth ministry. And so how can you, and there's a vital need for youth ministry because you're bringing the gospel to young people, right? And so how can you justify having a youth ministry to a pastoral council, for example, whenever you are essentially a money pit with no practical application goals?
It's hard to show it.
Oh, I agree. But that's what I'm saying. Like, but if we
I mean, there are some.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And there's ways you could try to measure things, and especially with neuroscience and stuff like that, because I was talking with Kyle Mefford, Dr. Kyle Mefford, from the Dr. Kyle Mefford Institute.
Is he paying us?
I know, right? He should be. But I was talking with him about measuring, because there's ways now to like measure with accuracy abstract ideas based off of surveys and things like that. But anyway, that's a
well, I think you're gonna put like gizmos on people's heads after confirmation and be like, how do you feel about all this? And it's like the synapses are firing and it's like, oh, he's full of the Lord, guess we did a good job.
And then you put one on somebody's head and then you see the Zool dog from Ghostbusters turning its head
on the screen.
On the screen.
What did you say your name was? Vince Clortho, Keymaster of Gozer.
According to this, his name's Lewis Tully. Lives on Central Park West. Do you want some coffee, Mr. Tully?
Do I?
Yes, have some.
Yes, have some.
So, you know, not like that, but... And that's regardless of what the measuring tool is or whatever... It's going to take dedicated and great youth ministers to be able to figure stuff like that out and to think outside of the box of what's always been done in order to change the field. Not so much like, oh, we need to get paid better. Oh, we need to have more time off. All those things are true, but they're secondary goods and we've made them primary.
Well, yeah, because, well, I mean, yeah. See, I think that's a different thing too, because if you're getting into... something like this or like into a charity work field, you have to know it's not a something for the money, but it's also how can you get paid more? Like literally, unless you're at a richer parish,
right?
You're not going to get, and there's no way. Cause like, if I do better at my job, I can get like when you're trying to tell your story and the problem is your vagueness, because if you're trying not to tell everything,
right,
is like most people would be like, let's do a great job. Right. We want to do a great job, and for doing a great job, I will get paid more.
Yeah.
You know, like if I have higher sales at my job, I get paid more for those sales.
And that's and properly ordered goods.
Yes. Right. And if I find ways to save money for the company, the profit is higher and I get paid more.
Properly ordered goods, right? And but versus like my goal is to maximize how much I make. But
you can't maximize how much you make and do a shitty job.
I mean, you kind of can.
You can to a point, but
right?
I mean,
if that's not the right screw for your customer, but you know you can make the most money off of that screw, and it's a good screw for that customer. I mean, the temptation there is to push that screw.
No, because if it's not right, it doesn't work. And then guess what happens? It doesn't work, and then they get mad at you.
That's because you're good at your job.
And then they don't sell, then they don't buy it. Well,
but if you're only about external goods, then it doesn't matter if you leave that job or get fired for that job, because you maximize the usefulness of that job.
Not really.
For your paycheck, and then you left.
If you were going to sell the right screws, you'd get paid more.
But then you'd have to stay longer in order to make the same amount of money.
I see you're trying to say, oh, yeah, if I sell this car without seats, then
without a windshield,
cheaper than the old lady's too late, she can't return it.
No, not even as sinister as that, but there is like,
I've been selling monorails all over. I put those cities on a map. Mm-hmm.
I've sold monorails to Brockway, Ogdenville, and North Haverbrook, and by gum, it put them on the map.
But there's still that temptation, right? Of like, okay, this is the one that I should really focus in on, or this is what I should be doing or should push in order to maximize my take. Not necessarily, you know, what is, how can I most improve my craft? Like, what does it mean to be a really good whatever it is that I do in this particular activity?
I understand, instead of trying to cut corners or whatever.
Right. And that's what I think is really interesting about our culture, because they have this, what they call like quiet quitting now. I don't know if it's not super new of a term, but it is a newer term, where it's essentially that's what people are doing. They're just, they don't ever leave their job, but they just do the bare minimum to maximize their paycheck, and everything becomes about the external goods, and nothing about the actual internal goods, because the job ultimately won't matter. And if they can do the exact same thing at another place with more money, then that's what I'm going to do, regardless of whether the craft's the same or completely different, from science spinner to youth minister or something like that.
Right. You're saying science spinner funny. It sounds like you're saying science spinner.
That's funny. Sign spinner. How long do you have to say it before it doesn't sound like a word?
No, I mean, I can kind of see what your point is. Right. And now you got me into thinking of youth ministry, the fact that you'll never... It's like, that's the thing, where a lot of jobs will sit there and you do well. And then when it's time for raises, they'll be like, well, you're doing great. You stack the cans on the shelves better than the other guy.
Right.
So we'll make sure we pay you more.
Mm-hmm. But that's not a measurement tool in youth ministry.
Right.
Right.
Because I guess you could kind of see, because like if...
Not
if,
really, because...
Well, if you go into the youth group meetings and they're ran like crap and they're and you put on a retreat and it doesn't work out well and you lose half your kids or...
Yeah, losing numbers would definitely be a way
to... No, I meant literally losing.
Oh, like losing kids. Yeah, that would be bad. Yeah. But no, like
yes, if you're losing numbers or whatnot. But I mean, I wouldn't even count under like confirmation kind of stuff. But I would sit, or maybe I would sit there and look at stuff like that. And it's like, how many of these kids came back and did youth group or something, and how many youth group kids came back for leadership positions or right. in the youth ministry and or something like that, or how many are now doing other items in church or right. something like that.
And the those are great, like smaller measuring tools, but they're not.
Well, those are actual tangible
measurements. Well, yeah, right. But the problem is they're not good theologically, because not everybody is called to a ministry, but everybody's called to an apostolate, right? Ministries are the work of the church ad intra, the things that are ordered towards and stem from the ministerial priesthood, the teaching, preaching, governance, sanctification, those kinds of things. So the things that have to do with liturgy, the things that have to do with education of the faith, versus like an apostolate where and only certain people are called to ministry, which is why you have to apply to be a volunteer, which is why your pastor has to approve you as a volunteer, which is why youth minister has to say, yeah, you can take this leadership position. It's just not given to you, right? It's just not something that I could just do because I want to do it. Because the youth minister, the pastor, all these, the church herself gets to decide whether or not you're called into her ministry, because it's rightfully hers, right? However, by your baptism, you do have an apostolate to preach the gospel, right? And it's not a great metric for success in youth ministry. Well, it partially can be, because if you have nobody coming back, then there's a problem. But it's not a great metric for youth ministry, because not all of those kids are properly called into ministry. In fact, only a small percentage of those kids should be properly called into ministry, right? Especially if you're talking 300.
But if you have more kids come back next year than last year.
That's possible too. But like a good metric would be like the kids that are going to mass after confirmation. That's a great metric.
Those are all the same ones that are helping.
Yeah, sometimes, but not always. but it's hard to gather data on that.
Because no, you don't know unless you're literally counting all the kids by face recognition.
Right,
exactly. And all that stuff. Or even if the ones aren't going to mass, which ones are the better people in the world? Oh, this person now opened the door for the old lady because she heard the thing that David said at youth
right.
night.
So those aren't great metrics, because they're hard to get data on, right? Yes. And so that's what I'm talking about of metrics for youth ministry. If anybody wants to work on that, to contact Kyle Mefford at the Kyle Mefford Institute.
Yes, I know. And it's not like it's like you can do a survey of all your mass attendance.
Right.
Attendees and go, okay, how many of you guys went to youth group
right.
25 years ago?
Well, one of the things before I left youth ministry, what I was working on with Kyle was this survey that people would take at various, that students would take at various points of their participation in youth ministry. And the survey was all related to questions regarding their feeling and experience about the faith, right? And we
see how it changes.
To see how it changes, right? And what we were able to do was figure out that we can accurately measure it. So the questions that we were asking measured what we wanted to know, whether people felt like, whether people had trust in the church, whether people had belief in that God was real and cared for them, and whether people were likely to stay in the church, right? So the metrics were measuring the thing that we wanted it to measure, right? We were able to discern three kind of categories of teens that with small margins fit into one of these three categories, like the ones that were like on a clear path of growth, that have very little doubt that they will leave the faith in the near future, right? They have no immediate, you know, it would take some kind of change in their trajectory in order for them to leave the faith, right? Uh-huh. And then you had those in the middle of the road where, like, you know, they're maybe on an upward path, but more stagnant than anything. And they're probably the ones that if something drastic happened in their life or something changed, or if they just weren't pushed, they might just stop participating in the church entirely. And then you had those where the last column of people where you're not really sure how they're still in the church. and, you know, and those were the ones that are like, oh, there's intervention that's needed for this particular third group, right? If we want to keep them into the church. And so that was really neat to start to develop those tools and things like that. I think that was a start of what could be really good metrics for youth ministry. Because then you can take, you like say, so you have like a review. You know, this is your annual review, and we want to take a look at about your methods. You talk to me about your methodology. How did you, what was your goals in how you put together your retreats and your classes or whatever it happened to be, or your youth groups. And my goal was to build up the faith or whatever that happens to be the goals were. And well, let's see how those worked out in your measurements. Okay, it looks like people at the base were here at the baseline, and you could see that after this retreat there was a spike. So it looks like it was really good of what you planned for it to do. People came back with an increased desire for the church, and there was a little bit of a lull, you know, come December or January time, or what, you know, whatever that happens to be for the things. And mm-hmm. you can talk about that, but then you can actually have a metric to say, like, I as a youth minister am doing something, you know. And you could say to the pastoral council, this is what youth ministry at our parish has been doing. Over the past 10 years, we've seen this type of growth from a student coming in. On average, they begin here with this level of participation and personal care about their faith, and they increase on average to this level. And those who and the percentage of people who were in this third category of people who were likely to leave the faith soon, this small percentage ended up leaving, but we retained this percentage, you know, or whatever, right? And say and you could say, like, okay, this is what youth ministry is supposed to do, mm-hmm. right? And here are the most effective tools that I have been using. You can see that after a retreat, there's a spike in all three categories.
Right.
You know, and because of that, we would like to increase care and attention at this particular level, you know, or whatever happened to be. Or we found that once we put them into small groups, according to this, we were able to increase again, you know, or whatever it happens to be, right? And then actually have measurements and goals and things like that, you know, to enhance the actual game, so to speak, the activity.
No, I think you got to do the adults. Have them fill out questionnaires and then check each of those adults versus how much they contribute each month. And then you can say, there you go.
There you go. Yeah. But that's just an example of ways that internal goods actually matter. Right. And that we're not, that our culture is moving away from that.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. But anyway, that's not what we were supposed to be talking about, but that's the tangent that we went on.
Well, that's how it works. That's how the spirit moves you.
Yeah. You want to say hi to everybody? We haven't really formally said hi to everybody because, like, we just kind of jumped into all the things in basketball and sports.
Well, yeah, because we were talking about basketball. We thought we'd record it because I thought it'd be something good, but then it was lame.
It wasn't lame. It was interesting.
You haven't heard yourself talk much.
I know. I did
something. I know. I listened to the last episode. It was pretty good.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yeah. It was pretty funny. Yeah. I didn't talk a lot about it.
Well, sir, there's nothing on earth like a genuine, bona fide, electrified six-car monorail.